I'm not pulling in my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the drive to work at home edition. Okay, guys, today we're talking about something that was really exciting that I got a chance to do in Vegas. Game Nights Live. So I have not one, not two, but three special guests. So Josh Lee Kwai, Jimmy Wong, and Becca Scott, welcome.
Yay.
Hello.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Okay, so Josh, why don't we start with you? What exactly is Game Nights Live? Where did this whole idea come from in the first place? Explain to the audience what it is.
Game Nights Live is live Magic Commander gameplay on stage in front of an audience of, I believe at Vegas we had somewhere between 12 and 1,400, maybe 1,500 people cheering. It is big. There's a lot of pageantry, and we, you know, it involves the audience. We call people on stage. We roll a huge dice. It really is just a giant live spectacle, you know, a cross between live theatrical performance and Magic gameplay.
Okay, so one of the things I want to explain today is a lot of work goes into this. This was the actual gameplay on stage was about 3-4 hours, I assume, something like that.
Around three.
Yeah, so we actually all got into Vegas. So the event was on Friday, and we all got there on Tuesday. So I just want to walk through sort of all the prep we did to get ready for the show. Jimmy, we'll throw it to you. So walk us through the prep.
Yeah, so this has been our 9th show now, right, Josh, of Game Nights Live. We started at Magic 30, and we've attended every Magic Con since, as well as one special Gen Con. And so we've gotten the rehearsal process down to a pretty good science here. So we all arrive on Tuesday. The show is on Friday, like you said, Mark. Wednesday is day one of rehearsal. So this is in a conference room or even sometimes a hotel nearby. And the goal is in this rehearsal to just get comfortable with the run of show, making sure that we also have two presenters that are alongside with us. In this show's case, it was Gavin Verhey and Rachel Weeks. And so there's a lot of just small little bits and pieces to go through. We get to hear our player intros for the first time. We get to sort of sit there and play through the game, play through our decks, and just make sure we know what each deck does. Come up also sometimes on the spot, hey, this would be a fun area to bring in an audience member, or like this card, how are we going to make this work in a live setting? And so we start early in the morning and we just go through the whole day basically playing the game over and over again just to get the decks in, get ourselves more familiar with our decks, get ourselves familiar with the settings, and nothing having to do with rehearsing like the walk-ups or anything, but just sort of getting the small bits and pieces out of the way. And then also, I think later on in the afternoon, the players leave and then Josh, at that point, the announcers take over to do some rehearsing of like the trivia show and stuff right beforehand, right?
And then
Thursday is like the big rehearsal day. But did you have something to ask in between there?
No, I'm just saying that's just Wednesday. No, I'm getting just the Thursday.
That's just Wednesday. When you see the live show, I don't think a lot of people realize how much rehearsal goes into it, because we even have rehearsals back here in Los Angeles prior to even going out to Las Vegas to make sure the decks that we built are functioning, are balanced with each other. And that's usually done by our in-house office staff. But yeah, that's just the Wednesday rehearsal. Thursday, we actually get on stage, and this is closer to like a dress rehearsal or a tech rehearsal for those that are familiar with theater, where we have Jake and Jamie working with the backstage crew to make sure that all the light cues are on correctly, all the camera people know what to do when the certain parts of the game happen, to position all the tables in the right places, make sure the focus is right, the cards aren't glaring, the sound cues are on, the microphones are working, and then we're rehearsing our walk-ups that day, which is what happens right before we get on stage. When there's a big player intro, we're walking all throughout the crowd with a host of bannermen people behind us, hoisting giant flags and stuff. So it's a really complicated process, but Thursday is really all about getting on our feet and doing that for real. And we do much less gameplay rehearsal that day, but also getting on stage and also learning how to say the card names when we say them so that James backstage can pull them up, and getting through that more specific technical process. And then once that day is over, we just show up on Friday and then we're basically there backstage, sweating it out, getting ready. And then the show goes on.
The one other thing goes on, Thursday, we all have costumes. All the players have costumes. And so Olivia does all our costumes and we have to try them on. And if there's fit changes, you know, that can happen. So that also goes on Thursday.
Yeah. And Mark, this time around, you had probably the most outside of my, I had an Eldrazi costume in Europe, but you had probably the most complex costume out of all. Well, and it was an incredible
if you count the cardboard car.
Right, if you count the car, right? I think that... So,
the car is incredible.
So real quickly, for the people that might not have seen this, and by the way, this will either... I don't know if sure it's up yet, but it will be up soon, and you guys will... You can watch it online. So the Dusk Morn had just come out, so we had a horror theme to the to this set, and I was the creepy clown. Josh was a zombie. Yeah. Becca was a ghost, and then Jimmy was the Lord of Pain. What is the Lord of Pain?
Yeah, a madhouse, basically. Yeah, the House of Pain. A lot of screaming and yelling.
Yes, rock star slash murderer, something like that.
There you go.
Also, something you brought up, I just wanted to make sure the audience understands. The decks are built by your team ahead of time. We don't build our individual decks.
Yeah. And the reason behind that is that, you know, we are playing for a live experience and we get one shot at it. You know, we're playing for real. We are drawing off the top. And we want to make sure that there's not a single deck that is so overpowered compared to the other ones that it would throw the live show off. And we also want to make sure that the decks have components in it that could be fun for a live audience. When we get to roll a giant dice that we call the cube consequence, or when we get to pull people up on stage, those moments are really exciting for the audience. And that's what makes the live experience that much more fun too. So that's why we pre-built the decks to make sure that in the same pod, they're all essentially rule zeroed against each other.
Okay, so real quickly, I'll give each person 1 minute to explain what your commander was and what your deck did. So Becca, why don't you go first?
I would love to. Thank you, Mark. All right, so the Least Reverent Medium. This is an Orzhov card. And each instep, she makes a bunch of spirits that have flying that are equal to the number of tokens created that turn. So I make a bunch of treasure because that counts. That'll make me a spirit. Just a bunch of spells that come in with creatures and tokens and really just go wide. That's it. Go wide.
Okay, Josh, what's your deck?
I was playing Sidisi Brood Tyrant, which is a card that when you self-mill, if you mill a creature, then you get a zombie, and it also mills on attack. So my deck was a zombie deck, was trying to mill itself to create a bunch of zombies. I was also go wide, but the difference is that I was making 2/2 zombies on the ground, and Becca was making 1/1 flyers in the air. And we're making the tokens in sort of different ways, but we kind of had a similar strategy as far as like just get a lot of stuff out there. And then try and figure out how to crash in with it.
Okay, Jimmy.
I was playing the Lord of Pain, which was the new commander from Duskmourne. And this deck was all about basically getting out a lot of different ways to deal damage around the table. Some of it was equal to all opponents, and some of it was specifically to one or two. And then I had a lot of huge spells in my deck that had ways to have their mana reduced. So I had like a 15 drop and a 12 drop that had their mana cost reduced. But if I cast it with the Lord of Pain out, then I'd be able to swing 13 damage or 12 damage at someone. And the idea was just to sort of make everyone take a bunch of damage over and over again and get to the point where they're all within one hit of the Lord of Pain.
Did you mention goading? So much goading.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of goad in the deck as well. It really is just about dishing out pain, and that was the primary strategy, and it did a pretty good job of it.
And also, it keeps your opponents from gaining life, too, which is important.
Yes, that is a very important factoid, especially as it pertains to this game. Mark, what did your deck do?
I had the Jolly Balloon Man. He's also from Duskmourne. Basically, what he does is he copies a creature, but they become a 1/1 flying red balloon that have all the abilities. And they have haste, so you can attack right away. But then they pop at the end of turn. And so the idea is my deck had enters and attack and death triggers. And I'm just trying to constantly do that. And there was all sorts of shenanigans to try to just make things happen a lot. So
that card is so wonderfully, beautifully thematic. The fact that it's a balloon, the fact that it pops brings me so much joy. When I first read that card, I immediately wanted to build a commander deck around it. It's so funny.
It is one of the creepiest arts of the whole set.
And your deck had something special too, Mark. We got the first time ever on Game Nights Live a couple of rule zeroed in cards, specifically ones that you designed, right?
Yeah, so what happened was when Josh and I had originally talked about it, he said, anything you'd like, any requests? And I said, yeah, I'd like some uncards. There'll be crazy uncards, although maybe we argue one was crazy. And so there were two cards that ended up in my deck. One was Give Me Five, where you have 30 seconds and you get one life for every high five, We'll get back to that one in a second. And then the other one was...
Frankie Peanuts.
Oh, Frankie Peanuts, which is you get to ask a question every... You make people answer yes or no questions, and they have to follow through on what the yes or no questions were. And I came up with all these yes or no questions and then never drew them, so... but I did. I did draw Gimme 5. So one of the tricks about Gimme 5 was Jimmy's commander keeps you from gaining life. And so what I realized was... If either I had to cast it before Jimmy got his Lord of Pain out, or I had to get rid of Jimmy's Lord of Pain in order to cast it. But so one of the things that happens in our rehearsal day is we pick like maybe 10 cards, like things that are like, okay, what happens if you draw this card? And so we walk through that. One of the things that Jimmy talked about earlier is we really want to involve the audience too. And so we tag all the cards we think might be a good opportunity to pull the audience up or involve the audience and stuff. And so, but anyway, in the actual game, I did get my Gimme 5. And in response to Jimmy casting Lord of the Pain, because I knew that I couldn't guess life, I cast it. And then I gained 78 life. So that was quite fun.
Does everyone know what that card does?
Yes, you gain one life for every high five you do in 30 seconds.
And a 30-second timer, yeah.
And a 30-second timer, yes.
Yeah.
Did you write that card?
I did. I made both.
An audience of 1,500?
I did not. No, that when I made the card, the intent of the card was, hey, some games we played at game stores, and okay, maybe you know, maybe you could actually gain 15 life or something. That was the idea. It's like, oh, I'm at my local game store, and you know, I that was the dream. The dream is you get 15 life. I did not, was not designed to be played in front of an audience of 1,500 where you... by the way, my favorite part of the whole thing is we each have sections that are for us, right? So I ran out with high-fiving my section because it's my section. But I finished, I did like a loop and I had like 5 seconds left. So I'm like, okay, so I go to Josh's section. I'm like, well, let's see if they'll give me high fives. And they were more than willing to give me high fives.
Josh, you really didn't prepare your section. They weren't even on your side.
I literally stood up and was like, hey, my section, put your hands in your pockets. Do not give them a high five. And some people, even like the next day, apologized to me. They're like, sorry, I gave Mark a high five. And I was like, you know what? I would give Mark a high five in that situation too. So hard to blame him.
Yeah, I would too. The way we determine the sections is there's sort of four sort of aisles that you see in front of us, usually at Game Nights Live. So there's like two in the middle and then two off to the side in the wings. And so each of the sections is assigned to one of the players. So also, no one knew they were on Josh's team until the show got started. So I would say their affiliation and alliance to you wasn't terribly high either.
They were very into it.
I disagree.
They were very into it.
Tribal as a species, and you tell us what tribe we're in, and we lean in hard.
We're going.
Yeah, we patterned it off of like medieval times, you know. So if you're with the Green Knight, you are with, you know, that is your champion. Yeah. Gimme 5 is really interesting, and one of the things we talked about is deck construction and the fact that our team, you know, creates the decks. Rachel and Jamie and Jake and a lot of our team are involved. And Becca was in LA, so got to come to some rehearsals and be involved in that process. And of course, they're building the decks with the idea that they're going to be played in front of an audience. So we try and choose cards that are good for audience participation. And that can mean a lot of different things. Can mean like, oh, this will be an opportunity to call somebody on stage to make some decisions for us. We play things like Wheel of Misfortune and things that require like the bidding of life so that each player can call up an audience member to do the bidding for them, to come up with the numbers that they're bidding. And Gimme 5 was a really interesting one because it's undoubtedly like a very fun card as far as the audience participation is very clear of what's going to happen. But the tough part about that card was trying to gauge exactly how much life might Mark gain and how game warping will that be. And in like, you know, in testing, I'm putting that in quotes, and by testing, I mean just us imagining the space, counting down from 30 and kind of imagining Mark running around. We thought around 100 life might be possible. And then we were arguing, like, is that okay for one mana for Mark to be able to do that?
Instant speed.
Yeah, and what will that do to the game? And, you know, those are the kind of discussions we have to have to try and make the game, you know, as fun and exciting. But also, like, you want the game to matter. You don't want Mark to cast this one card and it totally means that, like, he can't lose because it just wasn't meant for the situation with an audience of 1,000 people. So those are the fun parts of the show. And I think that moment is one of the classic moments of Game Nights Live. It probably always will be. And I'm just glad that we were able to like team up in that moment and keep your life gain under control so you didn't just run right away with the game too.
Yeah. When I ended up at 12. So like, I definitely, At one point, I got to 109 or something, I think. So I definitely, okay. So
you needed all that life, yeah.
Okay, I'm now going to reveal something you guys do not know, but this is the fun of live podcasting. So, so you guys give us the decks ahead of time. So, I involved all of R&D. I'm like, I want to make sure that I'm doing the best that I can. So there's a lunchtime commander game that I don't normally play in. But I mocked up my deck. I played every day at lunch. And I then asked the casual play team to give me tips on, like, they looked at all the decks. And so here, I'm going to read you something I got from one of them.
Wow.
They go, "Mark, I think your seed is actually the hardest by far to play in this pod, LOL. Your deck has a ton of both value and interactive pieces, which means you kind of have to be playing all sides at once. The main way I try to maneuver in this pod is that everyone else's deck is scarier than yours. Becca and Josh have a lot of scaling potential, and Jimmy will just kill everyone if left unchecked. I would kind of try to remain innocent as long as possible. Hey, I'm not doing anything crazy. I'm just drawing like one card per turn. Or, hey, I can blink my removal spell creature, but I'm going to point it at the most problematic permanent. What do you guys think I should hit? Keep everyone afraid of each other long enough for you to accrue resources and threats." And that is the strategy I followed.
It worked.
I actually knew about your practice because I met Chris.
Oh, did Chris?
You. And they spilled your secret about me at lunch.
So yes,
you had a lot of very brilliant magic minds on this that we don't usually have to deal with, and somebody who's guesting on the show. So that's impressive.
One other point I should make.
Did you tell the audience? Did you tell the audience yet that you had never won a game of Commander?
Yes. I was going to say. I don't play a lot of Commander. I don't play a lot of any constructed format. Mostly, I play Magic on my job. I play with my son a little bit, but I don't play a lot outside of work. And my job is playing Limited because I'm doing early Magic before the cards are balanced. So, like, I just don't do a lot of constructed play. So, the only time I play Commander mostly is when we have guests that come to Wizards. And part of the fun of playing Mark Rosewater is beating him at Commander. So I'm always the first one taken out. I had never won a game of Commander. So we said that up front. I told the audience that. I'm like, look, I've never won a game of Commander. And what I've learned is when you win a game of Commander, you get a belt. So that seems very exciting to play Commander.
Every time.
Millions. I think it was brilliant strategy to let everybody know that you'd never won a game of Commander because it made you the underdog, and your section was so fervently for you, more than we've ever seen before, to the point where, like, any action that Becca, Jimmy, or I would take against you, your section was just loudly booing it. Anything we did that seemed to be against you, it was just a chorus of boos.
And a single creature swung. Boo.
One damage in the air. Boo. to a crazy degree. And I was like, it was so smart early on to just let them know you haven't won a game of Commander because they're just all so on your side.
What? That was amazing.
My takeaway from
all the practice I did ahead of time was, I'm like, this is all going to be on charm and politics because, like, for example, one thing they point out is they gave me some strategies about what to do against each deck. And against your deck, Josh, they said, pray you have no answer.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, both, you got to exile his graveyard.
You both had bajuka bogs, but I had no way to exile the graveyard.
Right. Yeah. Wow, that's incredible.
Well, you use the politics very well. Just for the audience out there so they know, like, Mark was politicking at every possible chance, including, like, bringing donuts to the Wednesday rehearsal and very pointedly letting us know that he brought donuts to the rehearsal.
They were some of the best donuts I've ever tasted.
They were very good donuts.
My favorite moment was, Mark literally asked the player that came up on stage that was sitting in Josh's seat, I believe, was that if there was any card they ever wished they saw in Magic, and perhaps, just perhaps, he could make that card a possibility. And that, to me, is something that none of us could ever conceivably do in a game. We don't have that type of power.
You don't know about ever.
Ever is a strong word, I'm sorry, but certainly not conceivably in the next recent months.
The other thing that was fun for me is I started an improv troupe, and I have a lot of skills that I do not get to use very often, so it was fun. It was super fun just having a live audience, and bouncing off the audience, all that stuff was super fun.
Yeah, one thing Josh actually talked about was that this was one of the best groups I think we've ever had for Game Nights Live. And I too often forget that you have a huge history with entertainment. And Becca obviously is in LA with us and is just a born and bred entertainer as well. But all four players having a background in improv comedy and entertainment and writing and all that, I think really made for an amazing show. So I'm excited for people to see it when we put it on the channel.
Just want to say I'm so grateful for this opportunity because I perform a lot on camera, but I haven't performed on stage since pre-pandemic times. And it was just really great to get to interact with the live audience in that way. And it's one of those things that you realize you really miss when you get to do it. So I was delighted the whole time.
So Becca, let's hear the story. How did you get on Game Nights Live?
I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. Let me start with my whole magic career. My very first event, Jimmy was there. It was PAX East in Boston in 2018 for War of the Spark. There was a Mythic Invitational. They don't think they've had one since. And months earlier, someone at Wizards had said, hey, Becca Scott, you are a board game person on the internet. I was working for Geek & Sundry at the time, and I did a lot of board game videos. And they were like, learn magic. We'll do magic. And so Geek & Sundry did a couple videos. And I had played like with a unsleeved standard deck once. It was atrocious. I showed up to this event and I knew nothing. And ever since then, I've just played Magic. And so I was on Game Nights for the D&D crossover set because I also do a lot of role-playing games. And that was delightful. And I did a bunch of... Going back to live events, I did a bunch of coverage up into the World Championship 2020 before everything shut down. And then now I'm doing my own Commander show and took some time off to make a baby. And then, so I'm getting back into the world and talking to Josh and Jimmy, seeing them at game nights without a K, and just grateful that they invited me to game nights with a K.
So, well, yeah, I mean, I can shed a little light from behind the scenes, too. Like, Becca's been in, on our radar for a while for Game Nights Live, and somebody who we've worked with a number of times over the years in various capacities, been on our shows, been on her stuff. She's come in for a lot of the skit stuff we did. We know Becca's got a performance background, and she's, got that theater background. And so we knew she would be great on stage. And so we were looking for a spot, and I believe we wanted her to come on Gen Con, but she had other obligations because she's so involved in,
that world. You didn't book me before I booked my own shows.
Yeah, exactly. She had her own stuff going on. So then there was like it was kind of like, well, the next one comes up, and we're like, well, how about this one? Can you do this one? And she was available, so we were super lucky to get her. And so this was, what Jimmy said is like, this really is an improv comedy show when you break it all down. We do a bunch of rehearsal, but it's not scripted rehearsal. It's scenario rehearsal, similar to how improv rehearsal goes, right? Where you're like, here's some little tools that can be in your toolbox, but we don't know exactly what's going to happen. So it's more about philosophy than it is about specifics. And so I believe this show was probably our best show as far as audience interaction and all the performance, just, everything sort of being really smooth. And I think it speaks to the fact that like the two of you have such an improv background and a theater background. And to piggyback off of what Becca said, I've told everybody that we've been doing magic content for 10 years, but the most fun I ever have is when we're on stage and we start to play the game and the audience is cheering or booing or just interacting with the audience. Cause there's just, you don't get that with the camera, right? You don't get 1,000 people either booing or cheering you. You don't get that kind of reaction immediately.
Yeah. And in YouTube comments, you only get the booing.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel so exciting.
Really. So one of my favorite moments was, I had a very tough turn, and I was trying to figure out what to do, and then I'm like, okay, I'm just going to get an audience member to do this. I have no idea what to do. And so I asked, okay, I need somebody in the audience that's really good. Somebody, and the guy raised his hand, and he was like, can I do this? Yeah, can I do this? Yeah, like, fine. He did an amazing turn for me.
Yeah, he took went through combat, went through everything. It was incredible.
He was hilarious because if I were in his shoes, I would have assumed you just wanted me to do the one thing you asked, which I think was like declare a tax. But then he asked to see your hands and he was like, oh, play this. Yeah, no, I'll tap. Well, we'll tap like this. And just took over. And Like, hey, you're driving? No, actually, give me the wheel. In a way that I was really impressed by, like, the audacity. I thought it was awesome.
I was impressed by the calmness. He didn't seem to be thrown by the audience at all. He just saw the lines. And I forget what the plays were exactly, but he was like, we should do this. And I looked at the board, I was like, oh, you should do that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he was very insightful. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I had, I forget the name of the card. It's the one where it enters and it exiles a creature with power 4 or less. Or, mana value 4 or less. And I could copy it, like, 2 or 3 times. So, like, I could hit up, like, it was a very complicated turn, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so normally when people come on stage, it's a mix of, oh, this is overwhelming for them. There's a microphone shoved in their face. There's thousands of people now yelling at them. And then this particular patron was cool as a cucumber.
Okay,
yeah,
so
he was truly awesome.
I want each of you. We're gonna go in order. I'll and you're gonna tell me your favorite memory of the Game Night Live, or a memory you enjoy. It doesn't have to be your favorite, I guess. But so I will start with Becca. What was your favorite memory of the game, or of a popular a memory you really like from the game?
Oh gosh. Okay. Look, there's so many gameplay moments. Like, I kept being able to rebuild my board after things were taken out, and that's the power of this deck. But my favorite thing about the show was my House of Spirits section of the crowd. And just from the beginning of the game to, like, the first 4 turns, every time I drew a card, they cheered. Every time I tapped a mana, they cheered. And I just felt like we were connecting. And on a really beautiful level. It felt really nice.
Okay, Josh, what was a memory from the game for you?
I think I'm wired a little bit weird. So one of the things I really like to do is to be a little antagonistic with not my section, but the other sections. So I really had a good time early noticing that, like, the Funhouse Mark section was so... You know, they were booing every play against you and everything. And I was like, this is going to be fun. I'm going to go right at them.
Yeah.
So I was like calling them out and be like, this is for you, Funhouse, and then do something against Mark.
Yeah.
And, you know, can I get them to really feel like antagonistic towards me? And I enjoy being able to play with the audience in that way. And, you know, I like to say there's only 2 ways that you can root for the outcome of something. You can root for something. You can root against it. And if you only have one of those, you're not getting the full experience. So I like to give the other half sometimes. And that was really fun. To just be able to really, you know, in a friendly way, get into it with the Funhouse.
Wrestling taught us you need a heel.
Oh,
you
yeah.
need the yeah. villain.
Josh is a fine heel.
Certainly.
Okay, Jimmy, what's a moment
I hope I'm not stealing yours, Mark, but we've done this 9 times, like I said earlier, and that means that is a combined 36 walkouts. So the walkouts being when the announcer comes on, the person goes through the audience. And I thought we had peaked earlier in Chicago, I believe, when we had the prof on. Yeah, because he had never been to a MagicCon up until then. And we knew the anticipation for him was massive. And we were doing he was Is It. So we had all of the Ravnican houses. And that was something really easy for people to cheer for. But I think your walkout, Mark, single-handedly crushed every other one in history. As being the most amusing and fun and just like heartwarming to watch, because, you know, everyone in this room has had different contributions to players' enjoyments of the game, but yours is on a different level entirely. And so for Josh and I to sit there, I just remember we looked at each other a couple of times being like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Are you seeing the reaction? Are you seeing just how it's playing out? And that to me was just like chef's kiss. It was incredible.
So
can I tell a story about your walk-up, Mark?
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
Moment?
Yeah.
Okay. So Jimmy and I, like you said, there's 36 of these. So we've been on stage watching a lot of these walk-ups happen for other people. And, you know, people do a lot of interesting things when they do their walk-ups. And we can usually hear them in our ear because we have an in-ear microphone. So we can hear people. And most people are like, yeah, woo. Or they're like, house of whatever, cheer for me. Or they're like, woo-hoo. And Mark was just making a car noise the entire time.
Wait. We have to explain to the audience something that we've sort of hinted at. So when I got introduced, you guys made this little, like, cardboard card that I was inside of.
And on so suspenders.
Right, on a suspenders. So I have suspenders that the car on suspenders. And then there's lights on the car and there's a little spin wheel and I have a horn I can honk.
The license plate says drive to WRK work. And yes. The license plate as well, yeah.
So here's my story involves this, because you guys don't know about pieces of this. So anyway, we practice with the car so that I could get, because it definitely has a little sort of substance to it. So anyway, the way the car works is, I don't want to give away behind the scenes, but like it's held together with like, you know, tape and stuff. We're not talking like high tech or anything. So I started in my car and the steering wheel's held by like three or four like pieces of rubber or something. Mm-hmm. And I just started and one of them snaps. And I'm like, okay, well, it's held up like by four. And as I'm going along, they keep snapping. And so I had in my hand, because it wasn't compliant enough having the car, I had three balloons that represented the three of you. So anyway, I can't hear what's going on. We had all these, make sure at this line you're at this place, but I can't hear anything because the crowd is going crazy. The car is breaking. Literally, it keeps popping as I'm driving it. I'm like, I didn't want it to fall off me. And then I'm supposed to hand off these balloons before I do the final thing. But I forgot because I'm so worried about the car breaking. I'm trying to like keep the car from falling that I didn't hand off the balloons. So when they take the car off me, because before I do my entrance, they take the car off. But the balloons aren't supposed to be there. And we hadn't used the balloons in practice. Like the very last one, we did like one balloon. So I forget to hand the balloons off. So as they take the car, I mean, the balloons are still there. So the balloons start wrapping around my neck. And I'm like, wait, like I'm trying to like not, I didn't want to like be the first person not make it to stage.
Alive,
yes. Luckily, we got everything off. I survived. I even got to stage before my name got said, which I was shocked that happened. So
yeah,
we got kind of lucky because so we had two people stationed and they were supposed to lift the car over your head, like lift it up. And then you out from underneath it. And we got kind of lucky as far as they went to lift the car up because they couldn't hear the cues either.
Yeah.
They couldn't hear the music and everything.
Yeah.
So they went way early.
Yeah.
So that, yeah. And Jimmy and I were like, what's going on? And then we saw your head kind of, I was like, oh no, the balloon, the strings holding the balloons have wrapped around his neck. So as they pull the car up, it's pulling the balloons and that's pulling your neck.
Yeah.
So then they noticed that and they put it down and then you're trying to unwrap. And then they're like, we got to get this thing off of them though. So there's this little song and dance that happens. But luckily because they started early.
Yeah.
And also luckily you didn't like, you know, strangle. But because they started early, you were able to get to the stage on time. Yeah, that was a pretty, I mean, that's live theater, right? Like that kind of stuff.
Yes, yes.
You know, comes up and it's the show must go on kind of stuff. You know, most people probably didn't notice, but yeah, Mark almost died. Basically.
Yeah, that was a very scary moment because that's why we rehearsed. But yes. We had only rehearsed with one balloon and then now you had three and then the car. I didn't realize the car was breaking apart.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys actually looked at the car. All the different pieces snapped off. Like
Oh, wow.
I think it was hanging on by one piece when I finished, I think. So.
But ever happens in rehearsal. It only happens in the show.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how theater works.
All the three of us could hear the entire time, though, was just
I was in a car. I was trying to get the car.
Yeah, exactly. It's like how they say that who's the guy that played Obi-Wan? They just couldn't get him to stop making the lightsaber noise.
Yes.
That's the car noise, Mark.
Ewan McGregor, yeah.
Okay, so real quick to recap. So the way the game played out is somewhat early in the game, I did my Gimme 5. Turn four, I guess, because turn five you could play Little Pain. And I gained 100 or 70. I gained 78 life. And then you guys kept attacking me because I had all the life. And then it looked like Becca was going to win.
Yeah, I had played an angelic aberration, turning all my 1-1 flyers into 4-4s with vigilance.
Yep.
And then Jimmy, she was at 7 life. Jimmy did 6 damage to her, and she died to her bitter blossom.
To my own freaking bitter blossom.
I forgot you had bitter blossom.
Enchantment removal in hand. I was holding a piece of removal that was only for attacking or blocking creatures.
Ugh,
and had I had the right removal, I would have used it on my bitter blossom and untapped and killed Jimmy, and then Mark would have killed me.
I think you might have been able to kill everyone, actually.
No,
you had 8, 9, 4-4s or something. It was your board was ready to win.
Yeah, I think you were going to kill us all if you didn't die.
Jimmy, it was close.
So
but you know what? It's a better story for Mark to have won.
Recap the game. So then Becca gets knocked out. Josh is at 3 at this point, and so not really in a position to win. I mean,
Well, because Jimmy had Bajuka bogged me earlier.
Yes, yes.
After looking at 18 cards, he picked Bajuka bog, which I was so happy about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with his Florian, he's looking at 18 cards, and he chooses Bajuka bog to get rid of my graveyard. And I was set up by an Archfiend of Sorrow in there, which is a board wipe on a recurable creature from the graveyard that I was going to play out, give everything -2/-2, basically wipe everybody else's boards and be able to, maybe not swing for the win, but like, put it in hand, and when you got rid of my graveyard, that was just it for me. I was like, oh, all this stuff I've been setting up with, it's done.
And then Beautiful. It comes to me. So Jimmy's going to win on the next turn. Oh, and so behind the scenes, this is a funny story. The people who wear the outfits have to get dressed up whoever wins because they come out at the end. And so everybody, they know Jimmy's winning on the next turn, so everybody's dressing up in the Lord of Pain outfits. And then I realized that I have, what's the name of the card? I have the thing, the class where whenever you play creature, a token, you draw a card.
Oh, yeah. Caretaker's Talent.
Caretaker's Talent. But the final version of it, it makes all your tokens +2/+2. And I've just been making a whole bunch of mercenaries because the card I drew was the, when it enters and leaves, it makes mercenaries. Yeah. So I just was making balloons and popping them and making a lot of mercenaries. Yeah. So I figured out that if I attack Josh in the air for 3 and attack everything else at Jimmy, I could get him low enough that his Lord of Pain trigger would kill him.
Yeah, because once Josh is out, Lord of Pain doesn't care about two-player games so much as multiplayer. So I had to direct the damage at myself. Yeah, so it was that Hellspur Posse boss because it gave all of your outlaws haste.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I was so ready. I was ready to counter something.
Yeah.
Because I was holding up some mana, but you just used the activated ability and I couldn't do anything about it. And I was like, oh, it's over.
And the other thing is the card I had to play next, the, like last card I played that I won with, did damage equal to red mana symbol, devotion to red. So right. Like at first I'm like, okay, am I supposed to leave back the things with 2 red mana symbols? Like I'm trying to do the math. And finally, like, we have a timer because it was near the end. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just tap with everything. Like I... Math is for blockers, as they say. So I,
Yep, it was the right decision.
Send.
Yep, it was a very exciting ending, and I think up until the very last moment, it could have gone either way. I think the realizing that the Lord of Pain would be forced, Jimmy would be forced to hit himself with it, and therefore you had to kill me before casting a spell to get it down to 2 players was kind of the big unlock there, but.
But you know. Jimmy was the second player who did the final damage to themselves.
Yep. Oh, right. In that game, because of your Bitter Blossom.
Uh-huh, I will say, Mark, Lord of Pain.
Did the play design team prepare you for that specific interaction?
Oh, no. Mostly what they did is, they're like, here are how they're going to win. So, you know, and mostly the number one strategy I got from just playing all the games was... I'm only dangerous late in the game. I just have to be as innocent as I can and don't be threatening and don't attack people and just play as nice as I could. And so I'm like, lean on charm, baby. I just gotta...
Luckily, you have plenty of it.
And well-deserved victory, for sure.
Yeah, so that was... I want to say, I mean, last week was my... or this week was my 29th anniversary working at Wizards.
Wow.
And in all that time, this is my top 10 like of all time. Just really, this was an amazing experience. It was super fun. Originally, I didn't even know if I was going to do a podcast on. Like, I did a podcast on all of Las Vegas in general. And they're like, no. I'm doing a podcast just on this because this was so much fun. So I want to thank you all. I'm glad we all got to participate in this. We had talked about me being on this show since like Magic 30. And I'm glad it finally all worked out.
I mean, we picked the perfect spot, right? Like, there was a clown. It was a really exciting game. We had the perfect theme for, like, you and the fact that, like, you haven't won a game of Commander. And, you know, it was so exciting. And it comes down to everyone's at single-digit life total at the end. Like, boy, we really got lucky on a lot of levels there. But I think a lot of it is, you know, as usual, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. And so, you know, I think it's such a testament to the game and to you guys and to everybody involved, you know, how that turned out. What a home run.
So a final thought, we have to wrap up here because I'm almost to work. So a final thought from each of you. So Becca, final thoughts.
I am just so grateful to have gotten to participate, to just see the beauty of this community and really be embedded in it at MagicCon. And to say one more favorite moment was just being on stage with the three of you and watching each of your walk-ups. And just all three of you are absolutely epic players and people. And I'm just grateful to know you. And thanks to all your listeners for listening.
Josh.
I hope that everybody can hear how fun and exciting it was for us. I like to think it was that much for the audience. I think, you know, if you're on the fence about attending a live event or something, hopefully we can be another reason that kind of brings you over the top, because I think it is a really unique experience. It's definitely unique in content creation. And, you know, just Mark saying that it was one of his top 10 moments, when we know he's had a lot of magic moments over the years. You know, I'm proud that we can deliver that kind of experience, you know, to both the people involved in it and the people watching it. So it's just so much fun, and I hope more people get to check it out.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I love MagicCon. I think in the 10 years that Josh and I have been doing this podcast now, MagicCon has been like this incredible, new, refreshing thing for us to attend and be a part of. And so I'm very, very grateful to everyone that's able to make it out to the conventions. And I hope to see more and more people at them every single year. In my heart, I hope they never end. So hopefully everyone gets a chance and opportunity to come out to one. And yeah, the Vegas is always very special as well, because most creators come out to this one. So it's always great to have that big reunion. Before, it would be like I'd see the Living Writing Run people like once every 2 years maybe, but now I get to see them 3 to 4 times a year. So that is in and of itself an incredible blessing.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us today. This is the first one with three guests. So this is a first here. But I really, honestly, from my heart, I had a great time. It was super fun. I think winning was a little, you know, cherry on top of the sundae, but it was the experience itself, really, that was awesome. And I was not an event I will soon forget. So thank you so much, guys.
Thank you,
Mark. I want to know, Mark, where are you going to put the belt?
Ooh, yeah, the belt.
I'm still figuring out. So, by the way, when I won, I actually won the belt. I have the belt. Trying to figure out where to put the belt. So there's much debate. My wife and I have been talking about the belt. So we're trying to figure out what to do with the belt. So
right above the mantelpiece in the bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see a picture wherever it ends up.
Yeah.
The leading contender is my den where I'm recording right now, is where I have all, like, I have original Magic Garden stuff up here. So most of my magic stuff is here. So that's my guess is where we'll end up.
It'll be in good company if that's the case.
It will be very good company. The original Morrow's right here.
On the shelf behind you would be good, so that everybody on a Zoom call with you
can see my belt. I'll have to think about that. It's not a bad idea. Anyway, thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. And I want to thank all the audience for being here. But I can see my desk, so we all know what that means. This is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you all next time. And thanks to you all for being here. Bye-bye.